it's like, it's okay. Don't worry about the cough.
Sorry, everyone.
No, it's all right.
Death.
I know you're going to remove all these coughs later.
I'm not.
Very, very caring. You're a real...
You keep talking over them.
All right.
I cannot edit out your talking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Sticky Dragon. I am a sickening David Dedrick.
And I'm an empathetic Ian Boothby.
Thank you.
I see. Hey, happy birthday, young man.
Thanks.
Hello.
A lot.
Hey, it seems like just last year.
We were celebrating your birthday. Celebrating my centennial. This year, no.
Nope.
Dewey decimal.
Yeah, you're sick. Anyway, the point is, Dave turned 51 yesterday.
51 yesterday. And so thank you, everyone. Thank you, all of you out there. Every listener wrote in.
Mm-hmm.
In some form.
Yeah, everyone wrote in. They all wrote letters. Wrote in. Letters. Picked up their quills.
Well, typed in. It doesn't sound as good. Wrote in. I know what you did, and I thank you for it.
Yeah. Every one of them wrote, I know what you did last year. Had a happy birthday? Yeah, had a happy birthday.
And so
we did get a nice bunch of feedback from people wishing you a happy birthday,
yes,
wishing you the best.
Yeah.
Some people get funny little, pictures,
mm-hmm.
you know, memes.
Yes.
GIFs.
Memes,
gifs,
is it pronounced?
And such.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
JPEGs.
Nice. It's nice. It's, I think... In a way, it's probably not really good for us, this sort of Facebook birthday thing, you know?
Explain.
Well, I feel like...
It's like the best part of Facebook.
It does feel like it's the best part of... You're right.
Right.
But in a bad way.
Oh.
In the sense that you're like, I want more. I want more birthday wishes. I'm not getting enough. I want more people to wish me happy birthday.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, it's sort of an addictive thing. It's it's like getting likes. It is sort of an addictive thing. And I can see that that's why there are people who have... social media addictions.
Okay.
Because it does actually work in our brains to make pleasurable chemicals in our brains.
Because people are liking what you say. They're giving you affection. It seems to me like the best part of Facebook is it makes it easier to say that I love you and all the various ways of that, or I feel pleasant about you, or good, I wish you well. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the best part about Facebook.
That's really great. But on the other side of it is you as the rat with the pleasure button pushing it until you're dead. You know, so I feel like it's great, but at the same time, I'm wary of it.
Okay.
Not weary.
Are you wary of love in general?
Not weary.
Are you weary of...
No, I'm not weary of love.
Of response from actual people. Like,
I'm
if
not.
You were doing live shows mm-hmm. and you were getting that same kind of feedback of like,
yeah.
yay,
yeah.
would you be wary of the affection of an audience? Because it seems like the same sort of situation.
It is the same. I think it is the same sort of situation. But I think that it's more controlled in the sense that I assume we're not doing it every night. We're not going up on stage every night, right?
Well, we're not. Okay.
In your scenario.
All right. Some people do, but okay, go ahead.
Some people do. But do you think... Okay, well, let's just go a little bit. Do you think that there are performers that you've known in your life who are addicted to audience adulation? And maybe rather than perform as the best they can, they perform in order to get more adulation. And so it can be a block in a way...
Mm-hmm.
rather than helping them in their performance.
Oh, sure, yeah. You can always, by the way, as is our way, if you hear a siren and you can guess what it is, you will win a prize that you give yourself. Could you guess what that was? Was that a fire truck, a police car, or was that an ambulance or a hazmat van? Did you say ambulance? It's always ambulance.
It is always
ambulance.
All right, so... But can I just say, it was driving on the wrong side of the road.
True.
It was driving in the oncoming lane.
So you can either have a drink or get yourself some crackers and a little bit of cheese. Or may I also suggest...
if company's coming.
A little bit of liverwurst and maybe a little cream cheese together.
Oh, very is nice. That good?
Yeah, liverwurst and cream cheese.
Interesting.
That is a good mix. Mm.
I do like liverwurst just by itself on a cracker, but I've never tried it.
And cream cheese, you can't beat it. Okay, well, that just seems like your question is, would people go with approval over doing the best work they could do?
Yeah.
Do what people want to see rather than what is necessarily you feel is the best. Mm-hmm. I think that's something you would just find in any mm-hmm. part in your life, mm-hmm. you know, you
but,
want
so
to
I'm
improve
just,
of,
yeah.
of others.
So I think you've answered your question in the sense that can it
Of course, you know, it can, but it can with anything. So because it can with anything, it's
that's
not
right.
specific so, to this, you
that's
know,
right.
to the entertainment.
So I'm just saying I'm aware of the danger of the sort of ego bath.
How about at the birthday greetings? So you put up this podcast once a week, and then you look and see if anyone's
message. Yeah.
Are you addicted to those?
Oh yeah.
Okay, all right.
I would say it's complete.
Will it affect what you say on the show? Would you say something necessarily provocative on this show because you know people will respond, and then you get a little back and forth. Mm-hmm. Or whenever we say something personal, we always get like a nice bit of feedback from people, and they're very helpful, and they want to reach out to us, which is very nice.
That's right.
You could almost like manufacture a crisis a week in order to get people. Posting things.
Yeah.
Would you do such a thing?
No, but I have done things and not done them because of the show, but thought while I was doing them, this will make an interesting story for the show, this experience.
You mean in life?
Yeah.
So you have affected your own life so that you can tell the interesting story so
no,
that
no,
you can
it's
get
not,
a message,
I'm, no, no.
message
I'm,
board.
It's not affecting my decision of to do it or not to do it. I'm not saying I'm going to go on a skateboard down this hill at 500 miles an hour.
Okay.
This will make a great story. No, no. I just mean that things that I'm doing... just normal things. Let's say rock climbing, for instance. Mm-hmm. While I was doing it, I was thinking, oh, this will be something fun to talk about on the show. So, you know, like I'm aware of stuff that I'm doing that I can talk, you know, that it's...
It just gives you a greater awareness.
Grist for the mill.
But you're not rock climbing because
I'm not
you
rock
want
climbing.
To tell the story
That's right.
later.
I'm not thinking, oh, this I have to do this because I need a story for Sneaky Dragon.
To your original question, yes, of course, there's performers that are addicted to the response. There's performers that I know, like stand-ups, that do the same bits for, I think we've talked about this, for like 20 years, 25 years, even though it's not even getting great response, but it's just they know that this is their end bit that gets the, or, you know, they'll get enough of a response that they're addicted to that reaction.
Yeah.
They never change their acts, and it doesn't really go anywhere.
And it's hard. Like Frank,
or musicians that play the same song over and over again.
Well, Frank Zappa would constantly chide his musicians that he hired to play for him to not perform what he called the volcano solo, which was to, when you got near the end of your solo, to go up, to suddenly go up in octaves or whatever. And then, because that was, when you did that, when you went, the audience went, yeah, because it got them excited, because you went from a low note to a high note.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just an automatic response.
It's a trigger for them. They know this is the time to clap.
It's an easy thing, exactly. And so it's easy to fall into that trap, because you're like, every time I do that, I'm going to get the audience excited, and they're going to go, yay. And so to him, that was cheap. And so you shouldn't be trying to get cheap.
And in
responses. Stand-up,
there's some gimmicks you can do that you'll get clapped.
Sure, sure.
Which is clapping instead of laughter. Mm-hmm. You know, and you do your three things, da-da-da, da-da-da, da-da-da.
Yeah.
You know, or you bring up like a subject that, you know, people agree with you on.
Yeah.
And, you know, you lay that out, you're going to get some applause, and that'll buoy you up till the next thing. And, you know, sometimes you got to go, well, I'm going to take it out and make the audience not like me for a period of time. I was just watching, actually, speaking of that, I just found an old show I did with Urban Improv, my old sketch improv group, from 2006, and it took place.
So that's 9 years ago, almost a decade ago.
It's more than 9 years ago, it's 11 years ago.
You said 2006. Oh, 2009, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm
51.
51.
It's okay. The brain juice starts evaporating. Yeah. Drink more Coke.
Yeah.
Drink more Coke. Have some Turkish Delight. You'll be okay.
It's the gold. It's the cold. Not the gold. It's the cold.
That's right. You see, even got the word cold wrong.
I know.
So drink some Coke.
Because I was coughing.
All right. This show took place across the street from here at Hail Kitty Studios at a place called the Wink Cafe that no longer exists.
It was a vegetarian cafe.
Vegetarian cafe. That's why it no longer exists. And we did a show, and I remember it being a very fun show.
Yeah.
And, you know, watching the video afterwards, and like, oh, that's good. So I find it, and I'm like, oh, this is great. I'll put this up.
Yeah.
So I watch it first, and I watch, like, the first 10 minutes and just go, you know, maybe I don't want the hate crime tribunal. Maybe I won't put this up.
Yeah.
And I'll just keep it to myself and, you know, and not get fined.
Yeah.
And not, you know, get things, because it's a very different time period that we're in.
It is.
You know, now. Yeah, but looking at it, you know, these were shows that, you know, we would do and the audience would think, and but it was very much of the time that it was.
Mm. And those days are gone.
Yeah, I think mm-hmm. for the type of stuff that we were doing there. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm looking at it and going like, yeah, yeah, of that. And it's weird that you'd see like 10 years would make that kind of difference. But yeah, I would say so.
I guess, but 10 years is a long time. I think
it is.
You know, when you
But you know what 10 years is as well? It's a decade. It's 10 years. Well, it's a decade. Mm-hmm. You know, you would have been 41. not yeah, a young man, true. But still. That's it. I'm 1 year younger than you. But it's an important year. It's a crucial year.
Yeah, it is that crucial.
Yeah, that's right.
No matter how old you get, I'll always be younger than you. That's what you can say to me.
no, that's I have no idea what it is. No, here's what I think made a big difference is within those 10 years we've had social media.
Mm.
And so that when you put stuff out, you would get an immediate response in a way that you would not have 10 years ago. You could put something out and some people would like it, some people wouldn't, but you wouldn't get that immediate raw wah feedback, you know.
Yeah.
And have to deal with that for better or worse. You know, so that's for where we're at. And again, I'm looking at what we did and I'm not like ashamed of it, but it's definitely not of now.
Yeah.
You know, and it should not be up now. But, you know, back then, you know, we had kind of a policy where we'd go for it, whatever it was. You know, it could be something that was offensive and we try to, you know, we wouldn't do something that was offensive to be offensive. But if something went in that direction and you did get from the audience, you know, they're not on board.
Yeah.
You know, we go, okay, let's just keep going and let's see if we can give enough depth to these characters to make them not stereotypes. And that, because that's the only thing that can justify us doing this is to make them full characters and not this.
Yeah.
Even, you know, so we would.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, I saw a number of your shows from that time period, and I'm racking my brain trying to think of things that would have... I can think of one. I don't want to talk about it.
You can talk about the thing, but don't name the person.
Okay, well, there was a mentally retarded character that was a fairly common...
It sure was.
...trope in the show.
And
although it wasn't an unsympathetic portrayal,
mm-hmm.
it was. But it, you know, at the same time, it was sort of unnecessary, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And I think nowadays it would seem very... It stand out quite a bit.
Right. I mean, what we had was, in this thing was, it started, and again, the suggestion that we got did lend itself to this, but it was a First Nations character. And then another person came up with it. You know, and this person who was doing it was trying to get like the accent right and a little bit of depth to character and whatever. And then the next person came up and tried to copy what they did accent-wise. And so it takes it down like one more notch.
Okay.
And this is something that's actually happened in town that I kind of go, oh, don't be doing this now. Whereas the same person who did these characters, who liked to push the envelope.
Yeah.
You know, he also had a Chinese character, which was not... You know, was not uncommon at the time to do this.
Yeah.
But his accent was actually good, like really good. Like he got the beats, he knew enough words, it all made sense. But then the next person, okay, and so one of two things would happen. One, either a person who was Asian would come in the scene, and if that person who was Asian came into the scene, then it sort of justified it, and the audience went, oh, it's all right, everything's fine, here we go, off we go. Mm-hmm. Or two, then another person came on who was not Asian, would try to duplicate that accent, not do as well, and then it was kind of going off the rails.
Mm-hmm.
What has happened since that time is that person has left, gone to an Asian country, actually, and started their own club. But now people still do the accent that he did, thinking it was justified because he was kind of their mentor.
Mm.
You know, they kind of came up watching him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and even worse, they'll take it and they will take it to another country. Like I've seen them go to Seattle and they're doing an improv show and they come out with this real thick, crazy Chinese accent and the audience just... The gasp. Just you cannot get a breath because they've all just gasped at once. And then,
interesting.
Like, you can do, look, you can do anything on stage, but brother, you gotta work it hard if you're gonna do it. Like, again, the mentally challenged character, you know, I would never say no to almost to like anything really that we were doing on stage, which is how that ended up happening. But it was like, try to get as much depth to this character as humanly possible. Let's have it go in some directions where the joke isn't how the character is born or who the character is, but what the character does. And let's see where we're going. Let's go to someplace surreal. And he ended up writing like a big movie about the character at one point. And, you know, and he had done the character in front of people who were mentally challenged.
Yeah.
And they were all on board with it. And it's that kind of thing. Not that necessarily justifies anything, but bubba de booba de boo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's curious. And I think the other thing about social media is that because social media, we narrowcast, we create an audience of our people who agree with us to a degree, and then we kind of have to play to that audience, you know, and so you can't go off, you can't go, like, I'd be curious to know that if we had very many people who listen to the show who would consider themselves conservative in, you know, or traditional conservative, say.
Do you mean like financially, fiscally conservative? Do you mean like
socially conservative? Sure.
Any of those. Religiously conservative?
Yeah. But I think most of those people, if they listen to our show, not that they would hate it, but would just turn it off because it wasn't really their cup of tea.
What's the anti-conservative thing that you think we lay down?
I don't think, well...
Because you've identified in the past as conservative on the show and some of the things you've
I'm such a... I am so all over the map that it doesn't make... I don't even know what I am. But I can't think of anything specific off the top of my head now, but I suppose our Trump bashing, although maybe if someone who is a true conservative would be like, yeah, I agree, this is horrible. But at the same time, they might be like, my party, right or wrong. You know, like, so they'd be like, oh, enough of you guys. I'm sick of this show and your Trump bashing.
Yeah, I mean, you know? I don't think necessarily that we take a political stance for the sake of a political stance, even with Canadian politics. I don't think we've ever did a real strong NDP stance or a real strong Liberal stance or a real strong conservative stance. You know, it's I guess we're trying to, well, fuck, it sounds arrogant, but speak to the truth of what what we believe in. And sometimes that's on one side of things, and sometimes it identifies on the other side of things.
I hope lightning doesn't strike us after you said that.
Oh, do you mean because of God or no, the internet God? No, like Zuckerberg.
The pretentious lightning, the phone lightning,
yeah. That comes out and strikes us. Yeah, it's pretentious, but it is true. That's the thing. Man, the truth is pretentious, and the truth is embarrassing. Some
honesty can have that.
Yeah, it's that like feeling, it's like when you have to say that you love somebody, and it's like, oh, this sounds like, but it's true. Oh, it sounds so dumb. Truth sounds so dumb. Oh no, I really care about things, and I feel passionately about things. Shame on me.
Yes,
let's be cool, man. Let's just be cool and just like distant. That's the way to live life.
You're not even Canadian.
Yeah. My lucky thing, though, is I've said this before, that I don't feel I've ever been cool, so that's never been an option, so I'm okay.
Yeah, I would put myself in that in that category. I don't think I...
Do you think so? Because when you had the long hair and you're taking off your shirt and pictures, do you not think you were cool?
No.
Playing the electric guitar? You don't think you were cool? Might have been cool.
No, I was pretty terrible at guitar player, so...
Oh, okay. Well, that's still pretty cool.
So I don't think... I've never felt cool. Like, I never felt like...
Okay.
Like, I've never in my life felt, I mean, we've talked about this before, my self-image is, you know, terrible. So there's a picture of me.
But don't people with bad self-images?
Yeah.
Aren't they cool? Like, Rebel Without a Cause, James Dean.
Yeah.
He's got a bad self-image. That guy doesn't feel he's cool. He feels miserable. But what that is the epitome of cool is the miserable teen who's like, oh, things are bad.
Maybe.
Tearing me apart.
Sure.
That's cool. Right, so that's okay. It's cool isn't necessarily feeling you're cool. You're not Fonzie,
but I think cool.
And mentioning Fonzie for sure is not cool.
But here's the thing: like you are, like I think that
you've said on the show that you're a cool cat. Let me just say that I can find that.
Clip. I'm sure you could. Yeah. I didn't think I did claim that.
Because you do not feel you're a nerd.
I don't think I'm a nerd. No, I don't think I'm a nerd.
That's right.
I don't think.
Yeah,
I'm
I remember
nerd.
That because we were.
But I don't think I'm a cool.
You know,
person.
So you got a music nerd at a store, and you got you. What's the difference between the two of you? And you said I'm a cool cat.
Okay, I'm gonna scratch that. I am pretty cool, actually. Forget it. You're right. I'm gonna agree with you.
You're the cool cat scratching it.
No. I'm cool. I'm cool. I'm a cool person that doesn't know he's cool though. So I'm blowing it now. But I'm agreeing with you because I'm thinking about back to my life and, you know what? I kept it happening.
Sure.
You know, people wanted to be around me.
Do you know what? This is a good thing to discuss on a birthday. Mm-hmm. Looking back, you kept it happening.
I'm just saying, like, I'm not boasting, but I'm just saying that people
kept it happening. Sure,
people wanted to be around me when, you know,
and they still do.
Yeah,
you've gone to a strange environment, the world of garage doors, and you've made friends.
Yes,
you know, with a very different group of people than you would traditionally have hung around with.
Yeah,
and you know, you get along there.
Mm-hmm.
You go to a mini comic convention, you get along with people there. You get along with people here and there and everywhere.
Yeah,
I went to the show yesterday, the Critical Hit Show. We had our 5th anniversary. People were asking, "How's Dave?" Hope Dave's okay. What's Dave up to?
Wish I'd been there. I'm sorry. I couldn't make it.
I heard Dave was sick. I hope he's all right. I was like, yeah. I got to spread the word.
People
were apologizing for not having presents for you. And I was like, you don't have to have presents for Dave.
Yeah, I don't need those.
But, you know. Yeah.
Well, it's nice. So, yeah. And, you know, like the ultimate not cool is thinking you're cool, by the way. So maybe I was. I don't know.
No, the ultimate not cool is being a parent. And trying to be cool.
Well,
to your teenage kids at like a party or something, and coming and go like, "Hey guys, you want to hear some good music?"
Ooh.
And then taking out your record collection and then playing it for them, and that is the ultimate not cool. And then making jokes about the songs while you're doing that. That would probably be the ultimate not cool. And if you start dancing,
you pretty much summed up everything that would be not cool. Well, I think that if you're a parent, even like just coming and making like your presence known at a party. You are not cool. Mm-hmm. Like a lot, you know, if you're delivering drinks, like Pops and candy or chips or whatever.
Right.
That's fine. But then you just have to slink off again like the mere servant that you are.
What do you think of that whole thing, the parents going, I don't want you to drink, but if you're going to drink, drink in our house. What do you think of that business?
Well, if you don't want people to drink, then why are you drinking in the house?
Yeah, like, why are you allowing that? That made a lot of sense to me.
I don't want you to do this, but if you do it, I'm going to, yeah, I don't know.
Just made, what made me think of this was the idea of the cool parent. And yeah. Like who in high school you thought was the cool parent. And of course, in retrospect, I think we've discussed this in the show before, the cool parent is the creepy parent in retrospect.
In retrospect, yeah. Just yeah.
Like, hey, remember that mom? She was so cool. She didn't mind when you were drinking and you knew where her weed was. And so she'd flirt with you. And it's like, isn't that cool of her?
No.
No, not at all. Fucking not at all. It's a whole bunch of creepy. That's no good. Retrospect, no good.
Wrong in so many ways.
Please, let me withdraw that, Your Honor.
Yeah, I don't know. With the two girls...
I think the cool parent, in retrospect, is the parent that's just got their act together. And yeah. Is like there and listening and is there for their kid. And that in the future, you look back and go, oh, that person was actually legit cool.
Yeah.
I would say you're a cool parent.
Thank you.
For sure.
Thanks. I don't know if my daughters would agree. And
oh, it's not their business to...
But they don't know.
No,
if they don't,
they
know,
don't know. They're in it. They're too close to it.
They're too close to
they
it.
They can't tell they the can't. Forest. They're in the forest. They can't tell.
I guess they can only look back in retrospect. Maybe,
maybe in a 10 maybe years 10 they years can look or back. So. Or when they become parents, they can then look back and go, ah, I see what was going on. But like while they're being parented, they can't know.
Yeah, I know it's... I don't know. It feels odd. I mean, I was sort of joking when we started and then... It just feels odd to describe yourself as you think you're cool or whatever. But I just know when I was in high school that I and throughout my life, I guess, like you say, the garage door company, is that I've always had friends wherever, you know, like there was no social group at high school that I didn't have friends or people that I knew that, so I sort of spanned all the cliques of school, which I don't know if there's as many cliques in school as there were when we were in school. Like when we were in school, it was very stratified.
Do you think it's because
culture.
Of the social media situation?
No, I think it's because of video games.
Okay, let me and computers. Let me present my thing first, okay. And then I'll go with yours. Okay. I think that it might be because, but again, you know more about kids nowadays having had them. But I think like because that camaraderie and closeness of the someone who likes the things you like, you can get that online now. So if you want to talk to someone about Doctor Who, you don't have to find the people at your school. There's infinite people to talk to about that. So school doesn't necessarily have to deliver you that rush. You can get something different from school than the camaraderie of, you know, I really like Teen Wolf. But go with your
Well, what I was going to, what I think is, because with yours, I think, you know, like when I was a teenager and I liked Doctor Who, there were ways for me to enjoy Doctor Who that were not, you know, that were outside, you know, it's before the internet, obviously, but you could join fan clubs that had newsletters and stuff like that. You could, you know, get books. You could, whatever you wanted to do. You could have a friend knit you a giant scarf. You could do whatever you wanted to explore your
fandom. But if you'd watched it that night and were excited and wanted to talk about it, you couldn't then immediately talk to anyone about it.
No, because no one else watched it. They're right. But I don't think that's it, because I think that when you get to school the next day, whether you're talking to people online about how great it is, if you get to school the next day and no one likes it, you're still an outcast and some weirdo who likes some British science fiction show and no one quite understands what the hell you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So you're still outcast in that situation if you want to be.
Okay.
No, I think what changed was because when we went to school, like it seems weird now, but if you were like taking like computer science, you were a nerd. Like that puts you into like beyond the pale. You know, like people
back in our high school.
Yeah,
days.
Back in our
so
high school days.
So you're looking at like an Apple IIe computer.
Yes, right. Somewhere. When you're spending a lot of time making X's and zeros into a shape of Snoopy.
That's right.
That was, you know, that was just dumb
Go
and stupid,
10.
And you were a nerd, and you were a math geek or whatever.
Right.
And Mr. Fled Pants with your lace-up black shoes, and you know everything that you shouldn't wear in anywhere near other people. You know, and you were out. You know, and there was this. It was the jocks who were the popular kids in school, and you know, and they had the girls like them. They admired whatever testosterone they were throwing around, and you know, the guys like me in the graphic arts department can go fuck themselves.
Right,
and that was.
And you know what? Nature has a plan. They want to reproduce the strong people.
And so, but that's fine. But nowadays, because computers and I think particularly video games have so opened up the world of programming and the computer and to everyone, so it's not just a small group of hardcore Donkey Kong fanatics putting their quarters on the machine in the arcade, everyone's playing video games.
Yeah.
The jock, the science nerd, the pretty girls, the whatever girls, everyone in school is doing.
It's like the idea of the whatever girls.
Well, you know what I mean.
I was good friends with the whatever girls.
Yeah. And I love those girls, but. You know what I mean? Just the mass of kids there.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing.
You'll like Candy Crush. If you don't like Candy Crush, you like Call of Duty. You don't like Call of Duty. You might
That's
like
right. This, you'll like Madden or whatever.
World of Warcraft. You don't like World of Warcraft. We got something for you.
Yeah. You can play football. You can play warfare games. You can play sort of exploring.
You can play it on TV. You can play it at home. Mm-hmm. You can play it on your phone. You can play whatever. Yeah.
And it's everywhere. And I think that sort of removed some of the walls that, you know, of like, ugh, you know, science nerds or math nerds or whatever. Well, math nerds are the same as the jocks. They're all playing the same games and stuff. You know, they may not have the physical prowess of the jocks, but in terms of like the sort of a community of people, they're all doing the kind of the same stuff. And even like with Marvel movies and things, you see how comics and that sort of nerd culture has come out into the mainstream mm-hmm. in such a way because, you know, computers have made this possible through making it, instead of being awkward and weird and dumb special effects, you know, with people with cellophane wrapped, you know, bubble wrap wrapped around their hands, dyed green, so it looks like, well, I don't know what it's supposed to look like. But anyway, you know, like in Doctor Who days to now, you know, it's pretty good looking. So it's reached a kind of a point of acceptance, maybe oversaturation now in a way. Like, this is too many shows with too much of this sort of semi-pro computer animation going on. But, you know, that's where we are. But it's just, that's been the biggest change.
Okay, I will also throw in, though,
because I'm talking about when the girls, sorry, just to say one last thing. Because when the girls were in school, or when my nephew was in school, my oldest nephew, social media hadn't really taken off yet the way it has now. Like when they graduated from school, well, I guess in their earliest days of school, there wasn't really, there was social media by the time they finished, but not, you know, through a lot of their schooling, there wasn't. So there is still, but having said that, there are still, you know, mean girls that will create, and mean guys that will create little gangs of mean people to go around and insult each other and stuff like that. You know, they can even become president.
Hey, Dave, I watch Riverdale. I understand how it is nowadays. Trust me. I think
starring Cole Sprouse from Suite Life of Zack and Cody.
Okay, well, we can talk about that in a second.
I haven't watched the show.
No, I haven't. I've quite enjoyed it. I think the other aspect is, of course, the social media aspect where, you know, you would see someone and you would just see them, you know, either in their clique or sitting alone, and all you would know is what they presented in mm-hmm. school, right? Mm-hmm. But you can creep them a little bit on social media and go, oh, what are they into? Oh, they like, and there'll probably be something that you like, or there'll be pictures of them with other friends, and they've got a full life that's aside from school. You just assume, and it's a weird thing whenever even movies presented it sort of this way, which was you had a little bit of your home life, but you had your school life, and you were at school pretty much who you were at home, and it was just like, that's who you were. You're a nerd, you're a jock, you're whoever you are, you're the stereotype you are, and that's what you are. Mm-hmm. But I think like social media allows people to see, oh no, you like a variety of things, and you could be the person who likes this, but also likes this, but also likes this. And you got, you know, oh, and you were born here, and you did this, and you traveled to this, and, you know, you've got a family. And
Dave, dying.
Please stop smoking. And it just makes you a fuller person, and it gives you a little bit more, you know, it doesn't give everyone empathy, but it gives the opportunity for more empathy. And I think
that's true. It's funny, when I was in high school, maybe I've talked about this before, I was a very...
We've done 273 shows.
Yeah, probably.
You've talked about it before.
Okay.
We're going to talk about it.
I won't say it.
Again.
I won't say it.
No. I mean, no one's listening to all the damn shows. It's fine to repeat. There's comfort in repeating.
I was often... I was a very empathetic or sympathetic person. And so there were often outcasts, and I would feel terrible for them. And so I would befriend them and, you know, and try to...
Take them under your wing.
Take them under my wing in a little bit and stuff like that. But almost without exception, there was a reason that they were mm-hmm. outside of the social pale. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't much you could do for them. They were often unpleasant people that, you know, you just felt like, ugh, why? What did I do to you? Just
trying to... You didn't, but, you know, it's the old thing, hurt people hurt people.
Yeah,
you know?
I guess.
This person's been hurt, so they're going to lash out. And if you're the closest thing to them, they will probably lash out at you at some point, and you're going to get a little bit of that backlash off you.
Yeah, just... So. And it's not that I expected gratitude, it was just... It felt like, oh, this person... A little odd.
Yeah, I mean, you take in the little puppy that, you know, has been abused. Puppy's going to bite you at some point, you know, and because the puppy's...
Puppy's going to bite you, but that's not what I mean. I don't mean that they're going to attack me. I just mean that there's a reason why they have trouble connecting to people.
Damage has been done. Yeah. Something has happened. There's a couple of cogs that aren't connecting, and they found a shortcut that makes things work, and that shortcut is often damaging.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that's been a thing with me, is like trying to find ways of, you know, my instincts at times are absolutely completely unhealthy, and so it's like, okay, wait, you gotta like step back, go, that's not the way to do this, that's not the way to function as a person. I know you feel like doing this, but it's not the way to go, and you know, you gotta do the way that is good for people around you as well, and be a person. Yeah, and when you're a kid, everything's so extreme, everything's just taken up to, you know, 11 all the fucking time. Jesus Christ. Like, again, just remembering as a kid, basically being told, if you don't do well in school, you're fucked forever. That was the kind of the message you got, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you got that. And then, of course, you got, you know, your hormones are kicking in, and you're, you know, you've got basically, you know, you're going through puberty, and now your body is completely changed, and now you've got feelings that you've never had before. And then everything is extreme.
Mm.
Jesus Christ. By the way, learn right now in this environment as well. Just learn math. We're going to try and get distracted with math and learn all this stuff while, by the way, you have never been hornier and have no idea what it means or what to do with it.
Yeah.
Good luck, Chief.
Mm-hmm. It's not the best system.
It isn't, is it? Imagine a guy who's going to, and I'm going to say a guy, woman, whoever. Yeah. You know, it's like, you're going to go and you're going to go to work today.
Yeah.
But before you go to work, I'm going to give you a bunch of Viagra and we're going to watch some hardcore pornography right before we go to work. Okay, ready? And now let's work. Now keep your mind off that.
Yeah. You got a lot of spleening to do before you get to the door.
There you go. Now you can't do anything about it because you don't know what to do about it.
Yeah.
And now go. And now like just be normal. Be normal all the time. Oh, by the way, let's throw a gym class in there too. Let's throw a gym class in there where you get to you know, go change with your mates and go run around a bunch. And for fuck's sake. It's just I'm trying to think of a parallel that you could put an adult through right now that, you know, they would not go crackers.
I guess I feel, you're making me feel like I was really well adjusted. I'm feeling better about myself.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Well, let me ask you this.
Your misery is my company.
But I think here, and you know, again, I'm not making assumptions because I'm asking you questions. When you were a young man and you were in high school, what were your goals? Like, what were you going to be when you left high school? Did you have a,
I was going to be, well, I never really had like a definite way to do what I really wanted to be, like a writer. That was my biggest goal.
Did you think that school was how you were going to be a writer?
No.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think this is the.
It was a terrible. I had no idea how to do it, and the problem was I had parents had no.
Right.
No idea how to help.
So your goal,
child like
though,
me,
I think,
yeah.
was disassociated from school.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, people who went to school were told, you've got to study now and you've got to get A's.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't get A's, you're not going to get into university. And if you don't get into university, you're not going to get to do the thing. And if you don't do the thing, you're going to be homeless.
Yeah.
The end. That's the fucking end. You're going to be like in the gutter.
Right. You're right.
So they've got that on them. Mm-hmm. If you were to think like,
oh, we all
I want to be
that.
A writer, and the only way to be a writer is if I get A's in English and A's in this and A's in everything.
Yeah.
And not just A's in English, but you got to get A's in everything because you got to get into university. And if you don't, you're fucked.
Mm.
Then it would not have been a relaxing time at high school for you. You would be constantly, you know, this or I'm screwed. That's... And then you got to get to university and you got to be perfect in that too. And then even that, you, what the fuck? Who knows? let me just say,
tricky.
Your sexuality is kicking in for the very first time and, you know, deal with that.
Yeah, that's true. But I think you can exaggerate that part of it a little bit. I mean, obviously I was interested in girls, but it wasn't like, what didn't haunt me that I wasn't, you know, that I was unfulfilled. Maybe I was probably a little scared of girls as well, or women.
As
I was calling girls.
It's a new, anything new is scary.
Yeah.
You know, and that definitely is new. And none of the films or discussions you get, were helpful in any way, shape or form.
No, and I think our culture at that time particularly, well, maybe it's still the same. I don't go to school anymore. But we were separated from each other socially, you know, guys and girls. We were different from each other. And so, you know, there wasn't a lot of like, you didn't bring girls over to your place to play. You just played with guys. You played whatever games or whatever. I'm talking about as a teenager, not as a kid in elementary school. Elementary school tend to be more girls.
Mix them up.
But once you got to high school, you really went into your corners.
Yeah, you got a hardcore. Stared at each other. You got a hardcore us versus them. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, when you got any kind of sex education, it was boys go in this room, girls go in this room. And you don't, and here's the stupid thing to me was like, you know, what film did they see? Well, that's none of your business. Bullshit, it's none of your business. If it's like a science situation, you should let the boys see that one too so they know what the fuck's going on. You made it this fucking hazy mystery. It's like, that's none of your business what goes on with their bodies, so you fucking guess. Because that's a great way for boys going through puberty to deal with women, is to go like, oh yeah, I'm just going to guess what's going on. That's just fucking such nonsense, mm-hmm. right? But for some reason, the idea that if you saw this film, that would be, oh, shocking. And if they saw your film and saw how boys' bodies works, my lord. So best that you just both have separate fucking mm-hmm. information mm-hmm. and have to guess how this all goes down. Well, back into now into high school with you. Now into junior high school.
And
good then luck.
Yeah, and your idea of like my idea of how the female body worked was completely wrong. Like I had the whole,
how would you guess?
I had the whole misplaced. I didn't know. I thought it was on the front. I didn't realize it was sort of center from underneath. And so I would look at pictures. I remember looking at pictures of developing people and thinking, oh, I guess it moves up over time. Because you just want to, you can't, because you don't understand. So you're like, I have to explain my idea of how it works by away from this reality of what.
Yeah, and you know what? Nowadays, here's how I could explain it. I could explain it because like everyone plays video games, mm-hmm. right? So, okay, so you're playing your Call of Duty and you know how you got your gun and your gun does one thing. The gun shoots bullets. Yeah. Well, but then as you go through the game, you get an upgrade. Well, now it's got two functions. You can shoot bullets, but you can also shoot a laser out of it. You've just got to adjust. You can't shoot bullets and laser at the same time, but by God, it can do two different things and as you upgrade. And it's like, same thing with both of your bits. It's like, yeah, you know it from doing one thing, but hey, there's another thing that it'll do, and you now there's a new something new's been added. And that's where it all gets fucking confusing, you know? Just show them the goddamn film. And it wouldn't be so bad if there was like a thing where if you were interested, you could go to the library and you could have like looked it up and just gone, ah, I get it.
Yeah.
But you didn't even know how to fucking look it up at the library. No. There's no way of doing that. It sure as hell wasn't at the school library, you know? It wasn't in the encyclopedia that has everything else in the goddamn world in it.
Strange enough, the book I was looking at was in a bookstore, which seems very odd that it had pictures of developing bodies in a bookstore. Mm-hmm. But I was looking at it because I'm like, oh, I'm a teenage boy. How do women's bodies develop? I'll look at this book.
This was one of the nice things when I went to Science World here and they had the kind of sex exhibit for teenagers.
Okay.
And for, you know, kind of, you know, if you were like 10 and up or what have mm-hmm. you. And they just laid it out. It was just like, what do you want to know about this? Come here. We're just going to give you the basics. And, you know, they didn't make it, like, erotic. They didn't make it, you know, in any way, you know, naughty. They didn't, you know, there's a little bit of joking around. There's a little bit of, but it was very relaxed. And it was just like, what do you want to know? How this works? It works like this. What does this look like? It looks like this. How does this, and you're thinking like, well, they're not going to cover masturbation. But they did. They went, okay, here's how this works. It goes like this, 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 and this. Okay, there you go. Just straight out. And if you're a kid, thanks. That's all you want to fucking know. It's just like how the shit works. You know, without someone giggling to you or going, you don't know, in the playground. It's just like, ugh, what a goddamn nightmare. That's one of the good things about the internet is like you can't actually look this up if you can look it up well. I mean, admittedly, you're going to be led down another bunch of fucking paths that's not great. But, you know, at least information is out there. Maybe that still to this day makes me upset that there was two films and you could only see one.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So it gets your goat. I don't remember either film.
Because this is what's more important then while you're going through this, but then to know the information and you're hiding half of it.
Yeah.
And saying, don't look at that. It's shameful for you to look at this other. Mm-hmm. We can't possibly. By the way, your parents had to sign a form for you to get this fucking information.
Yeah.
So even worse, your parents now know you're watching this film. Mm. And you don't want any connection with your parents and your that. Ugh. You know, but like, yeah, we're going to hide half of the information. And now go live your life. And, you know, try to do math, knowing only how half of math works. We're going to teach you half of algebra. Now here's a test. Oh, by the way, this could ruin your life if you get it wrong. Take that test. Fuck. Yeah. To this day, pisses me off.
No, I can see that. I think you're right, actually. I can see why they're like, well, this is a private part of someone's life. Do all the boys need to know what girls are going through, or do all the girls need to know what the boys are going through?
because
but at the same time,
because they'll guess otherwise.
But at the same time, you certainly would have been more sympathetic to each other to know, you know, that, yeah, you're going to, like, boys and girls, you know, their breasts develop. Boys get sore nipples that went through puberty and their voices change and they get hairy and it's really unfortunate. And
you're going to start to smell.
You're going to start to smell.
You're going to get showering.
Yeah, and people are going to start mentioning, you know, activities that, you know, self-motivated activities that, i.e. masturbation, that, and you'd be like, well, how?
Which I'll be honest, I didn't figure out till I was 16, which, like, really, that's great. That's a lovely fucking 3 years of, you know,
trying to figure
getting
it
a
out.
Lot of work done. Yeah.
I'll be more candid. Well, I'll be humble brag that I figured out very young. Because when I was a little boy, I would play imaginary games in my bed. And I would, like, be running in my bed, mm-hmm. or I'd be rolling around and stuff like that. And then one day I realized, oh, this feels pretty good to be doing this.
Yep.
And then you're like, oh, it has an end. Ah, that's interesting. But it seems to me, man, this is a little too candid.
That's okay. Sorry,
it seems to me that there was a point
Dave,
where...
this is going
to
be great for the message boards.
It seemed to me there was a point where I went from just like, oh, that was felt nice, to, oh, I made a mess. Mm-hmm. Like... so I don't know if, like, with puberty that you start to, like, actually... see, I still don't know how it all works. Like, maybe I should have looked it up mm-hmm. at some point. When do you start to ejaculate? Is it right away, or is it, like, as you go into puberty?
I think it's mostly after puberty, but there's a little bit of something. There's okay. a similar situation that happens beforehand, but not completely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
it also is different for a lot
change.
Of different people, mm-hmm. yeah.
It seemed to change. So I figured that
this
out.
This is how we know that Dave had girls and not boys, because you would probably know that
yeah,
otherwise.
Oh, yeah, maybe
yet.
So. Yeah. So I figured out quite young, but I didn't really know what it was. Like, I didn't.
And there's no way to know.
Yeah, because no one's going to tell you, oh, you know what you're doing. You're not going to tell anybody. You know what I like to do at night is rub myself on my sheets, and then you're not going to say that.
Yeah, at breakfast. So anyway, Mom. Pass the Captain Crunch. And then she'd be so shocked because she'd go, we're not having sugared cereal.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Anymore. No more sugar in this house.
No, my parents would give me random bits of information that were just not helpful and just, and it would be, there was one where, like, I asked my mom, and I think it was like 12, I asked my mom, like, you know, have I ever had, measles?
Okay.
I asked her if I had measles, and she went, yeah, you did. You had German measles when you were a kid. Now, if you're thinking that that's going to make you sterile, and so you can have sex without, you know, without getting someone pregnant, think again, because that's not how it works.
Hmm.
I was like, and this was like, my dad was in the room,
yeah.
which this just got brought up in the fucking, it was just like, again, I'm 12, and there is no...
Well, I hope you took a lesson from that.
There is no way,
yeah.
you know, they might as well say, like, if you're thinking of lifting a car over the top of your head and throwing it around, you think again, young man, because we're not having that in this household. It was just like, it was just so impossible, but also, I was fucking mortified.
But here's the thing.
Mortified!
I don't want to be rude, but it does tell us that one of your parents was having sex at 12.
Ugh. I got no idea. No, it's just the worst. But that was the kind of thing they drop, right?
Yeah.
Into conversations. And it'd just be like, I don't, just let me know everything.
Yeah.
Just let me know.
I think I really did. That's something I dropped the ball on in terms of our kids. I didn't. Maybe Lisa did. I hope she did do better than me. But that's something we never really talked about was sex. And maybe it would have felt weird as the dad to be talking about sex with your daughters. But at the same time, it would have been important to have that discussion, I think.
Though I think what you would do sometimes is, you know, from what you've told me, is you watch like a wide variety of movies.
That's true.
And so there was a lot of like relationships and mm-hmm. different things, and you chaperoned the shows that they watched. So you wouldn't get like the Disney type films, you know, or Disney type TV shows that had really, you know, bad attitudes, lying relationships, terrible, you know, but you know, they'd be able to watch a Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which did have sexual relationships and whatever,
mm-hmm.
but you know, they had relationships,
you
know, so you kind of supervise that and expose them to that kind of thing. And you were there it wasn't just like, you're watching on your own. You know, Papa's going away, you know?
That's true. The girls' drug education was watching Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas when they were 10 and 6. So, yeah, it's a good time to learn about drug addiction,
mm-hmm.
drug abuse, you know. Don't do this. Don't sniff nitrous oxide and go to Circus. Never do that.
Yeah, it's weird. Like in,
although it looks like a lot of fun.
It does look a lot of fun, but you know, anything directed by Terry Gilliam looks a lot of fun. Time Bandits looks fun. You know, in the stereotype in TV and movies is always it's time to give the talk, and it's oh boy, here we go, and it's like, I don't know. Why do you have to like lay it down like that?
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it's almost like my favorite example of going to the dentist, which is, you know, how not to get your kids to go to the dentist. You don't go, okay, don't be scared. Don't need to worry.
Yeah.
But we're going to go to the dentist. But don't be scared. It's going to be okay. I mean, why would you even say that? Why would you even put scared in the sentence? You don't say that to people. I'm going to give you some pie. Don't be scared. I mean, doesn't matter what it is.
I know you just watched The Help. You're really scared. Legitimately so.
But you know.
I know it's really weird in Hidden Figures that the same woman is serving pie in Hidden Figures.
Okay.
And all you can think is,
oh, dear.
Oh, she's the woman from The Help. But I know she's a different character.
Yeah.
Even though everyone's enjoying the pie.
Mm.
Yeah. You can't do chocolate another pie? Film with pie for at least 10 years after doing a shit pie fucking situation.
I have not seen that. I saw a little bit of that scene and I walked away and downstairs.
Fair, that's fair. Like with my nephew, you know, he was like maybe 12, 13 at the time. And he made a reference and used the term tranny to me. And any
transmission.
It was not, unfortunately, okay. Transmission. And it was in referring just like kind of an insult thing about a friend of his or something.
Okay.
And it's one of those where like I could either do the you know, the clasp the pearls, you know, and like, oh my dear, you know, or shame on you or that.
Yeah.
And it was like whenever we've run into this kind of thing, and same thing with my niece, and something gets brought up and like maybe a swear word or said or something, whatever, I just try to get like almost as calm as humanly possible, mm-hmm. and just go, okay, let's break this down. And
slowly strangle them.
No. I just break this down, just go, okay, well what's that mean?
Yeah.
Just like, well, okay, well, no, here's what it means if there's a person who's transsexual and they were born this way and here's what this and this, this. And then it's always a thing where I'm saying to him, and, you know, I mean, you don't hate someone for how they were born, right? He's like, no. And it's like you just break the whole concept or the conceit is you're a good person. So there's no reason you'd believe this. And I love you so much. And I know that you're a good person. And I believe in it. So there's no reason you would have this kind of hate in your heart, right? And so, you know, hopefully, you know, when this gets brought up again later, you know, it's okay. But yeah, just trying to break it down very calmly. And if there was anything that was sexual, and some things have come up, you know, it's just like, just very calmly, you know, explain what I can to the point where I can. And then just go, now the rest of this, you should talk to your dad or your mom about. And they're going to be all right about it. So don't be freaked out about like asking about. This is the kind of thing they want you to ask. They don't want you to find this out from your friends or look this up online. They want you to know this, and they might look a little at first, but seriously, they will be glad that you asked.
Huh.
And just try it again, not in any way.
Yeah, I guess,
you know,
that's
here
true.
We go.
I guess
because yeah, true. It's a new, you know, again the trans thing. Just is, you know, I can see how, you know, when we were kids, it was, you know, you called fag and this, that, and all these things. Yeah, it was just
so many from the get go. I'm surprised how far back I can think of having gay or fag thrown into my face.
Right.
Just as a common insult, not just me in particular, but just everyone.
But I think it would be important for someone who was saying that
mm-hmm.
to have someone that they, and you know, my nephew respects me,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so like to have someone who he respects go, no, that's not what that means. Then and you shouldn't feel that. And I don't think you, and not even like you shouldn't feel that way, but like you don't feel that way, right? Because you don't have that kind of hate in your heart, and there's no reason that you would feel that way. And you're not scared of that person. You would actually probably support a person who was having trouble like that, because you're the hero of the story in my mind. let's just lay down that pipe. I think that would have made a difference. But like, yeah, back then, oh
no,
again.
I never heard.
Take you back to the Teen Wolf movie, for fuck's sake.
You never heard. But I mean, that's a step. I know it sounds weird. I know we talked about it on the show before. And I think that it's a weird step that we have to take as people to go, first we ignore, then we make fun, then we accept. It just seems like a weird, we have to have
that's
that
that fake
stage.
Gandhi quote.
Is it?
Yeah, first they ignore you, then they make fun of you, then they fight you, then you win.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. But I do think, like, when you think about how, you know, gays were treated in the past, which was basically they didn't exist, and if they did exist, they were arrested, you know, and then we accepted them, but only as figures of fun, you know, so then you had sort of these broad gay stereotypes.
Or you accepted them in the same way that people of color were accepted, which was, mm-hmm. I'm fine with them as entertainers.
Yeah,
and I'm fine with them. And so you
just
see,
as long as
they're
not living next door to me,
right.
I'm okay with them.
But you see, like, in old movies, and it's just mm-hmm. like, well, everyone's getting along. Black people and white people are getting along just fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course they weren't. You know, and like, well, that person is obviously gay, mm-hmm. you know, but and they're invited to the party, and everyone's enjoying having, you know, yeah. the old coward around. They're all having a great time that he's around. Why is no, I guess there was no problems back then. People love Liberace.
Yeah.
Everyone's having a great time. He had a TV show, for fuck's sake. Paul mm-hmm. Lynn, everyone's, he's the center square. We love him.
Yeah.
But it's like, that's, we love you as an entertainer.
That's right.
We love you as a novelty. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we reach some point where, I don't know, there's some sort of public, and obviously it can change, that sort of public acceptance can take a terrible turn. Mm-hmm. But it seems, sorry, I'm just dying. It just seems that, yeah, that we go from this sort of figures of fun to, oh, these people are actually quite nice, to, these are people. Wait, they're people. Oh.
Well, it usually comes from them not taking the shit no more.
Yeah, well, that's
in some capacity.
That's true, but.
And going, hey, fuck off.
You know what?
Like,
yeah.
Oh, wait, you're right. Fuck off. You're absolutely right.
But
yeah,
you could have tried that in the 50s and you would have ended up in a mental institution. So mm-hmm. you can, there's times to go fuck you, and there's times to not go fuck you. You
right.
can go fuck you when the tide is changing.
Yeah. Well, it's like, it's okay. Don't worry about the coughs.
Sorry, everyone.
No, it's all right.
Death.
I know you're going to remove all these coughs later.
I'm
you're
not.
Very, very caring. You're a real.
You keep talking over them.
All right.
I cannot edit out your talking.
I mean, the way a civil rights movement usually goes is there is, you know, what are you complaining about? You know, and then there's the
it's
big
a three-act structure.
Yeah, this yeah, it is a real three-act structure. It's like what's going on right now with we're bringing up Trump, but like Trump has removed the protections of trans kids in school.
Asshole.
And so making it a school situation. Yeah. And what you're getting is, you know, it's not about states' rights. Clearly, it's not about states' rights. This is about a right-wing thing. This is pandering to a prejudice. But what you get people saying is, aren't there more important things going on right now? What's the big deal? And that's always the case. Like, what's yeah. the big deal about, you know, where a woman is sitting on a bus? You know, aren't people starving? What's the big deal? What's the big deal? What is it really so hard for gay people right now? Why do they have to be out in the open? What's the big deal? And it's always a what's the big deal. But it is a fucking big deal. And, you know, it just feels weird that we have to fight this, like, again, like now. It feels like, it felt like, you know, when you were in high school and you heard what, like, you know, black people went through.
Yeah.
And you just went, well, that was terrible.
Yeah.
And we'll never do that again because we're smart now.
Oh, sure.
Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, nope, you're always dumb.
Yeah, we're the same people. So we have, don't like outsiders.
Yeah, I mean, this week, that guy, I forget his last name. And maybe it's good that I forget his last name. But Milo, the guy who was the editor at Breitbart.
Yiannopoulos?
Was that what his last name was?
Something like that.
Okay. You know, and, you know, his whole thing was provocative hate speech, attacking everybody. He was anti-trans folks, talking about how, you know, they committed all these sex crimes and that's why you can't have them in bathrooms, which is complete fucking bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And what brought him down was he joked about being molested by a priest and thanking him, you know, when he was 14 for being molested, because, you know, it made him better at sex. And then was talking about how, you know, in the gay community, the older younger relationship was a thing, and, you know, and the right wingers couldn't stand that, and so that got him the boot from Breitbart.
Mm.
And so he lost his Simon & Schuster book deal, and he lost all that. They were fine with, like, all the other hate, but this one aspect was like, well, that's, you know, straw, camel's back, you know, gone.
Yeah.
And it was a strange thing seeing someone who was, because he is gay, and he was, you know, but that's who you kind of need to present the really, really fucking hateful thing. You need the guy who seems like he's on the inside, you know, telling you all the fears that, you know, the people have, and just like, no,
yeah.
You're right. No, I'll tell you. They're all in the bathroom, and they're waiting for the girls, and they're going to pounce. And it's like, no, of course they're not. Of course they're not. You know, it's just bullshit. But you need mm-hmm. someone like that.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't believe it from a Steve Bannon, but you might believe it from this piece of shit. But ugh. 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 Yeah.
I vaguely know about it.
It's good because, you know, he had his time and he's gone now.
Mm.
That's done. He was on Real Time. this week. There's been a lot of like people protesting on campuses because he did say horrible things about trans people, and he's just basically anything fucking shitty. Mm-hmm. He would take pictures of fat people at his gym, and he put them online, and he had like a lot of followers, and they just make fun of people for trying to get in shape.
I was going to say, they're at the gym. What are you making fun of?
Yeah, and
for?
Look at all these people on the chemo trying to beat their cancer. Ugh. Fucking assholes. Look how lame they look. Lazy. You know, just every so often a guy gets famous for being a piece of shit. Mm. You know, and this guy was famous for being a piece of shit. And
but he didn't know how to massage it correctly, and he obviously went a little too far.
Well, he knew what was right for the time.
Yeah.
And then, like, he got too cocky because I think, like, he went on Real Time, which was really mainstream acceptance. Bill Maher really let him talk.
Yeah.
During the overtime segment, which is the web-only segment, Larry Wilmore told him to fuck off, you know, when he was saying that the people on the panel were all stupid, and they were like, actually, there was like some geniuses on the panel. It was just ridiculous. He told him to fuck off. A guy who was like a government guy told him to fuck off. Everyone told him to fuck off. So he got this real big burst of media going, hey, tell us more. And then some stuff came out from the past where he said this stuff about the priest.
Okay.
And then it was like, well, that's, and we're closing the book on that. The end.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's fame in the age of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
It will love you and then eat you.
Yeah. If you're a piece of shit, too. That's the other thing, too. It's like it. You know, you can be the asshole, but you know, the second there's any blood in the water, it's gonna like turn on you like that, and you're not gonna have any support because you were the guy who was just shitting on everybody. So now you're fucked.
Mm.
So don't be a jerk. Is the other thing.
Oh, thanks.
I also
are you saying I am a jerk, so I should stop being a jerk?
No, I think you should stop coughing for sympathy.
Yes, sorry.
Yeah,
it's a return of my cancer.
The one thing in that story, sorry, and this is a little bit dark, but the one thing in that story, you know, I always, every time I read this, just like, no one ever mentions, did they find out who that priest was? Because there's no way that priest stopped with him, or that was the first and that was the last, you know, and that wouldn't be the hardest thing in the world to find out who that was. Mm. Fucking find out who that was, and let's stop that.
Darn it, I was going to ask a question.
Okay.
Do you think he's telling the truth about the priest, though? Or do you think it's just okay.
Oh, yeah. I would say so. It's a weird thing to, you know, you could be joking about it. It's possible, but it kind of scans.
Mm. Interesting. Well,
Dan Savage has an interesting column about the situation about older men and younger men and his angle on it. And I don't agree with it, but it's not my place to agree. Well, maybe it is. I disagree with it. but he's saying how the reason that younger men and older men, say someone who, like, he had a relationship where he was 18 and the other person was 28, which is not, you know, it's still of age, which is a different situation.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason that happens is because, you know, when he was growing up, you could not be out.
Mm.
So you could not find someone your own age.
Yeah.
So someone who was older would be out and had enough confidence to be out. So they were the only people you could recognize as being gay. So they are the only people that you could be in a relationship with. And so that's why that happened, you know, so often. Which makes sense, but is also, you know, really leaves things open for, you know, people taking advantage.
I guess, but I mean, is it May, December or whatever? Like, those sort of relationships exist in hetero culture too.
Mm-hmm. But not out of necessity.
Not out of necessity, but I'm just saying there is that element. And it could be exploitative too.
Yeah, absolutely it could be.
So, I mean, I guess how old the person is.
Yeah, it's not necessarily exploitative, but if the options aren't there and leave it open to that, yeah. I mean, but then again, I remember like in high school,
there was always
the creep,
right?
Who was like in 30, who was like, you know, hovering around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, oh, she's dating this guy. Oh, how old is he? Like, oh, it's like, okay. No, but he's really cool and he's very different. Is he? We're back to the cool mom thing. Is he?
Yeah.
Is he?
Yes, I remember a girl in high school, in junior high school, going out with a guy who was 25. It seemed wrong. Like, for meet people your own age. Like, what the heck, guy?
Yeah. Even if you're Jerry Lee Lewis, even if you're Elvis, it still seems wrong. And that's about as good as it gets. Elvis. I think Elvis is about as good as it gets. And even that is.
But how do you mean good as it gets?
As in, like, okay, if you're looking for like a May, December romance.
Okay. Yeah.
Elvis and Priscilla.
Mm.
And, you know, she was 13 when he was a courting her
okay.
for the first time and kind of kept her, you know, you're going to be my girlfriend for that. That's creepy.
Yeah.
But then they ended up together and they ended up happy and she's still. Talks about him in glowing terms as he's passed, and they had as good a relationship, I guess, as, you know, successful and whatever. But it's still, that's as good as it gets, and even that's
yes. We agree. I think most people listening would agree. Unless they are in a relationship with a younger person. They're like, you guys are wrong. I'm turning off the show right now.
Do you know what I say? Don't turn it off. Take it to the message boards.
Take it to the message boards.
That's all Dave cares about.
Tell us that we're wrong.
By the way, like Tinkerbell,
yeah.
If you don't give Dave messages, he may die. It's like he's right now. He needs that support. You can't clap for him like you would Tinkerbell.
All
right.
So I know I'm getting a lot of this. But you're telling me that you have never like gone onto iTunes, gone into the podcast area, and then read reviews of Sneaky Dragon
or Beatles, and then just Beatles? Gone, oh, this is rough. This is rough. Oh, boy. Who's ruining the show? Me. If only that fucker would leave. If only he'd go.
Okay, well, can I just tell you that they're wrong?
Oh, that's fine.
They're completely wrong?
No, listen.
You've never taken that seriously, right?
No, because all right, here's what toughened my skin up.
Okay.
Was from the age of about 17, 18, I started doing stand-up comedy. And I ended up doing stand-up comedy in northern BC.
Okay.
And in northern BC, it's like, imagine the worst of the internet. Yeah. But they're sitting in front of you.
Mm-hmm. It's not a happy place.
And they have weapons. Okay, so I've dealt with that. Mm-hmm. So them online, fuck, who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares? I've dealt with like real people who boo, you're shit. I'm fine. Mm-hmm. I'm okay. I've dealt with bullies all my life, and I've dealt with hecklers all my life, and it's fine. No, the only time it will ever hurt is if there's something that's inside me that I think, oh, I screwed up on that one part. Oh no, I did that, well, and then they go for that and they can only open the wound that's already there, but they can't start a fresh one.
Yeah, no, I've read those reviews too, and I just go, well, they're wrong.
Yeah.
They're wrong.
I mean, my wife's going through now with that cartoon that she did. She's she actually, today, while recording this, CNN is talking about that cartoon on the Josie something show. I forget what it is, but they asked her this morning.
M-O-O-S?
What's that? Moose? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
She called this morning and asked if they could talk about the cartoon.
Cool.
So they're talking about that. But because of that, she's gotten a lot of online.
Yeah.
And yeah, you just take it and go like, okay. Take it in stride. Consider, block, 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 block.
Consider the source.
And make sure you block, because if you don't block, then someone says something shitty, and then the other eggs see that, and they all gather around, and they start, and then all of a sudden you've got tons of notifications from a bunch of shitheads. So if you see something that's just a straight-out negative, mean, you know, just name-calling, horrible thing, block that right away, and that stops that from spreading.
Yeah, it's, I've never had to deal with that.
Have you ever been hurt by a review?
Nope.
There we go then.
No. I mean, we just had one come last Thursday. Someone said,
your shit's weak?
Your shit's weak, yeah. Sorry, try harder. You know, that's fine.
But it was so nothing.
It was so nothing, I guess. I guess it wasn't specific.
You had to look at the address and go is this a real person or is this just a mass email?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm still not sure, but at the same time, if it is a real person and that's their opinion, then they deserve to have it out there. I mean,
but it's fine. If you do anything to any degree, and this isn't going, hey, great show. but if you do anything with any unique point of view or try or take a risk, someone's not going to be on board for it.
Mm.
And especially if you're doing something that's comedy, nothing makes people angrier than comedy they don't get. And get doesn't mean they're not smart enough to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
It just means they don't get it, as in they don't connect with it.
Yeah.
And why is everyone else laughing? What's all this praise? Why is everyone, these guys are laughing at their own jokes. Fuck them. This is terrible. Oh, it makes me angry. I got to tell them. You are not funny. And some people think we are. Yeah. No, you're not. And it's like, okay. I know you need the reality to be that the only things that you think are funny are funny. I understand. It really hurts when other people are laughing and you're like, I'm not laughing. It's like, okay, I understand. But, you know, it's not the way it is.
Mm.
And it just infuriates people.
So the Completely Beatles reviews aside, have you had reviews that have hurt your feelings then?
reviews? Yes. There was one that I got when we were doing a Roy Orbison tribute show, and I was playing Red Robinson in it, who's a local DJ who brought like the Beatles to Vancouver and what have you. And it was not a good show. The people that were singing were great. Mm-hmm. The music was great. The band was great. It was a spinoff of a show they did called A Closer Walk with Patsy Cline, which, of course, she's got the song A Closer Walk with Thee.
Mm-hmm.
This show was called A Closer Walk with Roy Orbison, which makes no fucking
His
sense.
His famous song, A Closer Walk...
No fucking sense. Right? Like, I get that it's a sequel to, it's like a little spinoff of that. Mm-hmm. But no, you can't, it's not, it has to be something, you know, I don't know what walking song.
Pretty Woman Walking Down the Street.
Yeah, Walking Down the Street with Roy Orbison.
That would have been better.
Something.
Much longer. Pretty Woman Walking Down the Street with Roy Orbison.
Right.
That would have been a better name.
So when I got that, when I got this job, you know, you're going to be Red Robinson. Okay. They gave me this hair dye that made me, honestly, it was Ronald McDonald's hair dye. It was just fucking ridiculous.
I remember.
To the point where people would come up to me on the street and go, "You're in show business, right?" It's like, that was just, they'd ask me something about show business. Like literally they would, that would happen so often.
Yeah.
So he said, like, all right, so we got the music down. We just need some comedy bits, and we also need to give the biographical information. So what I'm going to get you to do is write it. And I wasn't getting paid to write. Mm. He just had all these interviews that he did with Red Robinson and said, okay, so I'm going to need you to take these and structure it to lead into these songs. So I had to, like, listen to all these and try and somehow do the biography of Roy Orbison. I shouldn't be fucking doing that. And then it was like, we're going to do three comedy bits. You know, one bit is going to be you in drag. One bit is you with, like, a Fonzie-type character. And one bit is going to be you as John F. Kennedy. And
what?
I know. So the Fonzie bit is, like, kind of an Andrew Dice Clay type thing.
Okay.
So just write some 50s-type jokes. Just write some. Just make a sketch where you come out and just do some shtick. And so I do that, and it wasn't going great. And went, you know what? I'm going to show you some comedy bits to do, and these will kill. So he was giving me some things about, like, putting a chair down and, like, missing it and hitting my head on a table. And it was just the worst. The worst. Like, just worst. Like, this character is a terrible idea. Okay, so that's bad. Then the John F. Kennedy thing. Mm-hmm. I make the huge mistake of making jokes for the band. And one of the jokes I make is, I need this like I need a hole in the head.
Ooh.
Well, the band just goes crazy. They love it. And so stupid guy who's running the fucking thing goes, you got to do that. That's your closer. That's your fucking big end joke. That's your end joke. Well, okay. Let me just say, I did the drag bit too, and that actually worked.
Okay.
So we do the show. people laugh when they see my hair. That's what I'm Red Robinson. Huge laughter because I look like a goddamn clown. I do my Fonzie thing. Crickets. I do the Kennedy thing. Halfway through it, we got a Marilyn Monroe type singing Happy Birthday, Mr.
Yeah,
President.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. And then something happens that I do the, I need this. I can't eat a hole in the head. Cricket, cricket, boo! Aggressive boo! We hate you. We hate you. We hate you so much that for the rest of the show, we're just like, we're on stage. Until you do your drag bit, then for some reason we win you. I win them back because I'm a pretty lady now.
Okay. Pretty woman.
So we get the review in the Vancouver Sun. And it's like maybe about a third about the show and the songs. And then two-thirds is the car accident that's me. And it's like, except a car accident is interesting. And it just was tearing me a new asshole.
Oh, my goodness.
Just terrible.
Yeah,
like, so I'm reading it and, like, you know, I'm there with my girlfriend at the time. And I'm just reading it cold. And I'm just like, oh, man, I'm so mad.
You're so mad, did you say?
I'm so mad. Yeah. I'm so mad and so angry that I'm embarrassed and humiliated. Yeah. And I just, and a bus is coming and we're going to wait for the bus. And I go, I'm going to have to take the next bus. She's like, what? No, but we're going to the thing. Yeah, I got to take the next bus. And so she gets on the bus and I just take the paper and I just hit it against the bus stop until it explodes like feathers out of a pillow. I'm just like beating it. I'm beating the newspaper until it explodes. And she's sort of watching on the bus and she's, oh, it's just ugly. So ugly. Yeah, that was the worst.
But one. In retrospect, hilarious.
Yeah.
To me.
We also had a thing when we did Star Trek where a local reviewer thought one of the things that we did was homophobic, which was we had Spock and Bones, and they had their antagonistic relationship. And then about two-thirds of the way through, they just had, in a moment of tension, they just kissed.
Mm.
And then they were in a relationship for the rest of the thing. And the person that kind of initialized or went with this idea was Sean McDonald, who's a gay actor who's, you know, in this. And, you know, you could take it that way, but we took it in a positive way. And so in the review, they mentioned it was a shame they went for this thing. But then we kind of went back to him on that and talked to him. And then later he wrote another thing going, I got this one wrong. You know, this one actually, the way it plays out, you're right, that was just my initial, you know, reaction to that. But no, this is actually, you know, I've watched it again and know it is a positive thing. And it's a character bit and it actually works. And it also works with the tension that the characters have in the TV show. You could see that actually being...
Yeah, was this revealed like in the Georgia Strait or something?
Georgia Strait, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say, because it's not a mainstream... Because that's very early on to be talking about homophobia.
The reviewer was gay. Colin Thomas. Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Colin Thomas, who, you know, would champion issues like that.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it made sense.
Yeah. No, it's interesting because, yeah, that's very early on and using a word that you would hear very rarely at that time. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw the show. I don't even remember that part of it.
Well, and we actually got a review once for, it wasn't a show that I was in, but it was a show that I was assistant director on and got fired on. Because I made my mistake on getting fired was the director was kind of very artsy fartsy, but a nice guy. But he would like, you know, a bit wasn't working, a comedy bit wasn't working, and they went over it again and again. And I'm watching it, and it's like again and again. And he said to the actress was like, what can I do? And he went, well, just imagine, you know, when you were a girl, you did this and was really getting the motivations. And then I said, can I say something? And it's like, all right, faster, dumber. Faster, dumber. And she did it faster, dumber, and it killed.
Mm-hmm.
And he went, yeah, I'm going to have to let you go because that was kind of going against what I was doing. And he undermined me with that. And so I let go. And it's like, all right, fair enough. But in the opening musical number, we did it was to the Nutcracker Suite. And there was a joke about Asian youth gangs in the lane.
Okay.
You know, because we were near Robson Street. And there were Asian youth gangs.
At that time.
At that time, there.
Yes.
Doing that.
Doing much shooting and missing each other.
And the reviewer went, they made this racist joke about Asian youth gangs in the lane. And that got a lot of heat on the company. And we ended up having to do a unlearning racism workshop.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which did not work out well.
For anyone.
Well, the reason was, you know, we did the thing where, you know, they brought, and they're the kind of people that come in and do companies and go like, okay, what are some racist terms?
Yeah.
Okay, what are some stereotypes? What are positive stereotypes? What are negative stereotypes? It's a trick. They're all negative because a stereotype is a stereotype and it dehumanizes you. Okay, fair enough. So, but the problem was, you know, doing an improv scene that's going to be 3 minutes long, if you ask for a location, you get, say, you know, as we're talking about with our other thing, China. Now, you've got 15 seconds to set up that you're in China.
Yeah.
How do you do that without any stereotypes? What do you do?
Yeah.
And they really couldn't give a response to that of just like, okay, so do we just not take anything that's, you know, could possibly be controversial or whatever? And it's like, because we can't really do that. So what are you going to do? And, you know, so how do you condense, you know, things, you know, without making it a stereotype. And it's still to this day is a trick of how to do it. But yeah.
Hey, if you're going to do Scotland, you would have stereotypes that you'd fall back on as, you know, things that...
What you do with Scotland, though, is because it was so primarily a Caucasian company at that time that, you know, you can always joke about your own family, but you can't joke about another person's family.
Mm-hmm.
So it's conceivable that you could be Scottish, so it's fine for you to make fun of Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're now doing India, you know, how do you do India in 15 seconds?
But I just mean that it doesn't matter whether it's China or India or Scotland. You're still relying on stereotypes to bring, you know... bring across that quick information where we are, because there's bagpipes and blood
stereotype
pudding or whatever.
Archetype
to
the point where if I did get something like China, I would just go like this: it's great to be in Hong Kong. Don't you love being in Hong Kong? Damn, I love Hong Kong. So Hong Kong. Anyway, then go on to the
thing. So you established location
by saying it out loud.
very nice question for you. Man, that sounds like, you know what, when I listen to this back, that's going to sound like I made an edit. And I didn't.
I think like Dave must have had a real big coffee.
I just stopped to say, did you happen to watch that Seth documentary?
Not yet, I'm sorry.
Oh, wow. Well,
But okay, well, tell me what you thought of it.
I thought it was pretty interesting. He's an interesting guy because he's sort of an...
I've literally lost it.
Oh.
It's lost in my living room. I'll find it as I clean.
He's an example of a person who invented himself. Or reinvented himself as a new person?
Because he was originally Gregory Gallant.
Originally Gregory Gallant.
No, wait a second. Right. Is that really his name? Because yes. That sounds like the name that you, is your mid-name. Like, that's your glam name.
No. This was his, that was his own
so
real
name. So he went from Gregory Gallant.
Being Greg Gallant, yeah.
To Seth,
yeah.
That sounds like such the opposite and that people would.
And there's a brief scene of him talking to a crowd, and he says, there was a last name. Because he developed the name in the time, like sort of punk rock days, post-punk days. And it was supposed to be kind of scary sounding. So Seth something, but he wouldn't. He said, I'm not going to tell you what my last name was because it's too embarrassing. But he says it was really hard.
Oh, I hope it's Danger.
Seth Danger. Seth Bloodmoon. He said...
Seth Game and Match.
Seth Game. That's the man. He said it was hard work to change your name. You know, because you had to tell everyone whenever they called you Greg that your name was now Seth. Mm-hmm. And he said, and that's a young man's game. I could not do that. I couldn't spend all my time correcting people and, you know, introducing a new persona. But watching the documentary, you realize how much of his life is sort of self-invented, whether it is putting on his smock to draw or wearing a suit from the 1930s all the time, or even designing this very beautiful but singular hair parlor. His wife's a hairstylist for her. He's got this place. It's got a giant head on it. This giant, like, billboard, smiling, sort of aristocratic head of this fellow. And then the whole place is like a Seth design. It's colored a certain way, like this blue color. And it's all done in his particular style. And it's interesting. Mm-hmm. And that's where she works. She goes there and she works. And they show her cutting his hair. So, but...
Is she old-timey as well, or is she modern-day?
She's sort of more... I think she enjoys elements of what he does, but I don't think she's as married to his old-timiness as he is.
Do they have a television?
They did not show a television, but yes, because he says... It seems like, judging from the schedule he says during the film, that he never sees her, except when she cuts his hair.
Oh.
Because, yeah, it's just like, I, you know, from this time of the day, I do this, and from this time of the day, I do that, and this time of the day, I do this... And then, you know, and then it's like in the evening, I draw comics, you know, until 1:30 in the morning. And then I get up at 6:30 and da, 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 da. So he doesn't get much sleep.
Yeah.
And then he just draws or does stuff all day. So if you ever wondered why he can A, draw comics, B, be a magazine illustrator, mm-hmm. C, build an entire replica of a 1940s, 50s Ontario town, small town.
Yeah.
D, create puppets to make puppet shows. And then E, also be married and have a house that he's also, you know, made a certain way. He says in the film that it's not done, he's not trying to restore the house to some sort of past, you know, some sense of what it would have been like in the past, but just make the house more what he wants. So it's just more of an aesthetic statement than some sort of idea that this is an absolute reproduction of what this house would have looked like in 1930s, let's say. But he does live in a 1930s house. They don't show the house too much. They show the inside of it, but not... the outside. But yeah, no, it's he's an interesting person in the sense. I mean, he's doing, I think I mentioned before, he does this new thing, and they show his collection of rubber stamps, because he does the thing now where he just rubber stamps his diary comics. Mm-hmm. So if he needs a picture of him walking, he just grabs a walking rubber stamp, you know, ink thud onto the paper, write in comment into balloon. Next one, you know, I need a close up of the side of my face. Here's that one, clunk. You know, so. He's recognizing that diary comics are so repetitive because mm-hmm. they're mere. Because is it just? I mean, I think he has a point, which is that his point is that comics are ideal for the exploration of the inner person in the sense that they're dynamic, but they're also a monologue. They could be a monologue, but a dynamic monologue.
Sure,
you know, so you can have a person walking in a field, so you have the visual beauty and stuff like that. Then you can have their inner thoughts. Of them thinking about stuff, thinking through their life or thinking through whatever. And, it, you know, it's less boring than just, you know, like listening to a person, like a radio, let's say, a person do a long monologue. Or in a book where you don't have a lot of visual stimulation, it's just a long monologue in a book. So it was an interesting point. But at the same time, having read those diary comics, I can tell you that they can be very dull because they aren't that visually stimulating because they are just repeating picked images from a rubber stamp.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting idea, but I don't think it's a successful idea. And I think what's interesting about him to me, too, is that he's best when he's not in front of himself. So what I like best about him is like Wimbledon Green or the North American Cartoon Society or whatever. Northern,
whatever that was. Yeah.
Yeah. Where it's just like a sketch thing he did for fun, a sketchbook comic he did for fun, and just did it, just kind of vomited it out onto the page and didn't overthink it or get in his own way and just put it out there. And it's great. It's great fun because it's just a romp. Where something like Clyde Fans, which is a sort of forever ongoing...
That's the important piece of work.
But that's the important one. That's right. A guy,
God save us from the important piece of work.
A guy, which is a guy wandering around a dusty warehouse of a broken down company or a closed company, discussing his brother and the past.
Sure.
And he's been drawing it for about 10, 15 years now.
Yeah.
And it's in no way does that spring out at you as the Wimbledon Green does. Mm-hmm. You know, where it's just this fun, crazy, kind of. Well, it's just a romp, it has adventure elements on a train and a plane, things happening, having to race somewhere to grab something before other people get it.
I remember long time ago, because I've never met Seth. We've met Joe Matt, we've met Chester Brown.
Mm-hmm.
But I sent him a couple of my books.
Yeah.
It was very, very sweet. Wrote me like a 2-page letter about it.
Yeah.
And in it, he kept going on about, we're very similar as cartoonists in our approach. And it was kind of breaking down things. And he kept going on about that. And I was like, are we? I kind of went through and was like, I guess in a way we are. But it's like he was able to see that kind of depth of like, oh, yeah, you're right. There is a very small root here that you're mm-hmm. right. We both do come at it from the same perspective. And you are correct. Though, if you looked at both of our works side by side, you would never go like, oh, these guys are similar. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, the approach and the attack point, the starting point and where we're trying to get to is similar. But yeah, oh, the important piece of work. The important piece of work, that's just such a thing. Again, it's like I feel like I'm holding myself back right now from like, just like, I'll tell you the problem.
And it just well, seems say like, it. Say it. Tell it just us the problem.
Like a dick thing to fucking go. It's like, I don't want to judge people's lives and art and whatever. It's like, look, I'll preface it by going like, whatever works for you, works for you. If you want to make this story, make that story. Who am I to judge?
You can judge as someone who enjoys someone's art. You're allowed to judge what they do. Here's the thing. Because you judge by not buying it. That's a judgment.
Okay, that's right. But I also, and the weird bit is, normally you would not say anything about a person's personal life because their personal life isn't their art yet.
He makes it so. Yeah.
That's right. He has presented himself now in this documentary and made his life his art.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Joe Matt. Joe Matt has made his life his art. Chester Brown has made his life his art, has presented his personal life as art. And so it now feels like in those three situations, their life is in the public domain, is open for judgment because they've made it art as well.
Yeah. Art crumb as well. Yeah.
Okay. Our crumb there's almost a little bit of me which wants to go, okay, of the three Crumb brothers, which one's Chester, which one's Seth, and which one is Joe?
Yeah.
Which is the healthiest of the three? Like,
Obviously, Joe Matt is Charles.
When we started, you make your own judgments, and that's what you do. But when we started reading their comics, all three of them were very kind of loose.
Yeah.
And they tell really interesting stories and with passion, and the stories would really pop.
Yeah.
When they cross over with each other, it'd be really neat. Mm-hmm. There was this real freshness and whatever. And you can't have that freshness forever. No, that's
true.
Fair.
That's true.
But it feels like as things have gone along and how they have expressed themselves in their art as to their lives, is all three of them have tried to assume more and more control over the aspects of their life. Joe Matt talks about masturbating to pornography, but he doesn't like the chaos of the pornography, so he edits it. He edits it so much that he never gets a man's face in there.
Yeah.
He spends all this time controlling the pornography so that he's ejaculating at the exact same time every time. He's got to get exactly right and get that porn just fucking right. He can't just like go to the internet, click, watch, wank, and then get on with his day. It's an obsession. It's got to fucking be, I got to control because this is, my sexuality is chaos and I've got to control the chaos. And in that, it just feels like it obsessed his life and took him over.
Yeah.
Chester Brown talks about how it feels like the chaos of relationships is something that doesn't interest him. Mm-hmm. So now he goes with prostitutes.
Yeah.
And you think like, oh, well, I guess, he goes, he looks up in a newspaper like, I'm going to go with this prostitute. No, he is so precise, and he applies that same artistic, you know, precision to the prostitutes. Like, okay, she's like this, but she's not like this, but she's too much like this, but this is too much like this, and so I got to go to the same one every time, but we've got to do this exactly the same way. Yeah. And again, it's controlling the sexuality, and it's controlling what would be chaos, and there we go, and then I'm going to make that into art. Same with Joe Matt. He's made the control of his sexuality into art. Yeah. Then you've got Seth, who seems like the most...
grounded?
I don't know. It just seems healthiest. Okay. But even that, what he's controlled is he has stopped time, it feels like.
Yeah.
Whereas like, I'm going to keep things as they are so that things will not age. Things will not pass.
Yeah.
You know, things will not go forward. I will keep things locked into this one thing. I will always wear the same kind of clothes. I will control the house more and more. You know, and again, he seems to be, you know, with this woman who he never sees, you know, but he's in control and working on the same piece of work for 15 years, 10, 15 years, that's control as well.
Yeah.
It won't end.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't end, I won't age and there'll be no chaos.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm doing. And occasionally, that little bit of chaos bursts out as a really interesting bit of art, you know, that he puts out there, but that's not the real work.
Yeah.
Because the real work is this. And in this, it's the control. Mm. Keep it fucking tight. So you've got three fucking artists who did amazing, really exciting, passionate work, and now they've all just assumed this really lockdown fucking control on their lives, and it's just like, oh, that's too bad. I say, as you know, the person who really liked the other stuff and wishes them all the best. And in all three situations, it doesn't sound like the healthiest thing in the world for me. It feels like locking yourself off from the world and making your own world where you're going to be safe within it and controlling that as much as possible. So, you know, you don't get hurt and time doesn't pass or whatever fucking reasons people assume that much control. And it's like, well, it's too bad.
It is, I think you made some good points there. You know, like Chester Brown, obviously, where someone who has been seeing the same prostitute for 15 years, they go out for dinner, they go to movies, they have a relationship outside of their sexual relationship, yet he still pays her for sex.
Because it's, well, and again, he hasn't revealed the reason why completely, but the assumption I would make, and when I assume, I make an ass out of you and me.
Me?
Yeah. I would assume because that's the control thing. Because then it's under his framework.
Yeah,
that's the safety.
She can't leave him.
She can't leave him.
Yeah,
he can stop. And she can stop being his client, she can stop working for him.
Yeah,
and that. But that's a different situation than leaving you.
That's right. That's an employee leaving the company or whatever you call it, you think of yourself. Yeah, it's very. They do go a little bit into. They do have some pictures of Chester and Joe Matt in the. Everyone, I think you all hear the, and it's going away.
Yep.
Forget about it. Forget about that. But take a drink. They have some pictures of them together and stuff, but they don't really, and they have a little bit of interviews with Joe Matt and Chester, but, you know, they're so, like you say, all of them are removed from each other too now. They don't, you know, Seth lives in Guelph, Ontario, and Chester lives in Toronto, so they're not close, you know, they're not within walking distance of each other anymore. And then Joe Matt lives in LA. So none of them have the kind of let's go to a diner or play poker relationship they had in the past. So that's different. But and I'm sure it broke apart for reasons that they won't talk about anyway. So, you know, Chester Brown's interesting. Like, just to bring up Dave Sim, so Marcus Harwell will write in. When Dave Sim was going...
See, you are going for the right.
I am going for the reactions. When Dave Sim went, barmy, there's a long interview with him and Chester where they're both crazy. Like, is this... You read it, you're just like, like...
Well, did Dave go with celibacy? Was that... Am I remembering this correctly?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, again, that's just a way of controlling.
Control. That's control, for sure.
Yeah. It feels like in almost all these cases, sex is the chaos.
Yeah, I guess
and
so.
And how do you deal with the chaos?
That's what's
you
fun about it,
you control the
isn't
chaos.
It?
I'm going to be celibate. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to go with prostitutes.
Yeah.
I'm going to edit pornography just so that you won't tell me how to come.
Yeah.
I'll tell you how I'm going to control the thing that I can't control.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The, maybe it's significant that Seth and his wife don't have kids because that's also chaos.
Well, also that would mean aging. Time
that's
would
true.
Move forward.
You do know you're aging when you have children. That's true. That's very true. So there was a time when, besides this crazy interview, which I read, you're just like, well, these guys are like both a couple of nuts. But then when Dave Sim decided, I'm going to start this petition that you can't you can't talk to me anymore unless you agree that I'm not a misogynist. Chester Brown, now, if that was my friend, I'd be like, whatever, sign the petition, you know, what a nut, you know, whatever my opinions of what you are, I'm not going to not be friends with you because you're, you know, being like this about it. Whereas Chester Brown was just like, oh, you're a misogynist, so we're not friends anymore. I'm not signing it. We're done. Which, you know, that's basically what he said. He didn't say that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that was his attitude to it. You're a misogynist. The things you say are misogynistic.
Yeah.
Therefore, you're a misogynist. Whatever you think about yourself. And so I'm not going to sign it. So we're not going to be friends anymore. And then they're both, so they're both cut off from each other. And you're like,
whereas I think like,
seems weird.
And again, I don't know, but I would assume that if he hadn't asked him to sign that thing, that they could still be friends.
Oh, of course they'd still be friends.
Because he would be still okay with being friends with a misogynist.
Yeah.
But not one that's asking him to lie and say that you're not a misogynist.
Yeah.
Because there's, that crosses the line.
Oh, you know, all our friends have weird, maybe not as shockingly terrible as some of the things that Dave Sim has said, but whatever. But
we
all disagree also, with things.
Dave Sim also explained why he wasn't a misogynist, which was like, wow. And his reason that he wasn't a misogynist, or that he wanted people to sign this, was because being a misogynist is the worst thing you can be in this society.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, it's such a horrible insult to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Not, I'm not a misogynist because my views on women are not misogynistic.
Yeah.
But like, it's like saying, I'm not a racist. Why? Because being a racist is bad.
Yeah.
But wait, you've said all these racist things.
Yeah.
You're not in any way adding counterfacts to what you've said about the thing or why people are calling you this. You're just saying the word is something that makes you look bad, and that's why we've got to we got the word is the fucking issue, not your actions. And it's like, Jesus Christ.
But I think Sim's essential thing is the idea that it's not misogynistic. I'm just pointing out facts to you.
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot take facts and tell me that I hate women. I'm just telling you the truth about women.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
which other people think is misogynistic, but
yeah.
But his main thing, is the word misogyny.
But
you know,
yeah. No. I understand. I just think it's strange, like just that kind of two super stubborn people. You know, just one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not signing that. You are misogynistic.
Well, it's not a million miles away. Sorry, it's not a million miles away for Donald Trump, where, you know, you've got a guy who has said repeatedly, you know, I'm the least racist person you're ever going to meet.
Yeah.
And he's also said, I'm the least anti-Semitic person you're ever going to meet.
Ever.
Never presenting.
And you know, the whole world.
That's right. Rabbis. Every rabbi in the world is more anti-Semitic
than Donald
than
Trump.
Than me, this guy, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And I am the least racist person. Mm-hmm. A white person.
Yeah.
A rich white guy. Weirdly enough, in the entire world, by the way, it's amazing to have both those things of being the most anti, you know, non-anti-Semitic, and also the least racist. Fantastic, you made both those things.
Mm-hmm.
But like, in no way ever presenting a reason why.
Yeah.
Even though you've said all these things that are racist and anti-Semitic.
Well, he just said
it's just like, no, the word is the wrong thing. And so I'm just going to say that I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And now if you could sign a paper saying that I'm not, that would be fantastic. Sure. And that means that I'm not.
You keep bringing up Donald Trump, but there's no one who will write in automatically, you know, so I'm just pointing that out to you.
Well, Donald Trump might, but we can't do it electronically. You have to print it up for him because he will not, he does not take things electronically.
Oh, is that right?
No, it's like he reads the New York Times, he watches cable TV. Mm. So today he's watching my wife's cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So and he's going to be mad at my wife.
That's good.
Yep.
Kind of like that idea.
That's how that goes.
You're on the watch list.
I'm going to doubt you saw this. But do you know the comedian Pete Holmes?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Did you see his TV show, Crashing?
Is it on HBO?
It is.
And it was on the other night, and I went, oh, I could watch Pete Holmes, who I like his podcast, and I was like, nah, watch someone else instead. Oh, look, Hitman 47's on. I'll watch that for a while.
Well, they're very similar.
To be fair to myself, I watched 20 minutes of Hitman
47. I would actually like to see a thing where he is crashing on comedians' couches and just kills them. And every week he just kills a new comedian.
Is that what it is? He's crashing on comedians' couches?
Yeah, the idea behind it is he walks in on his wife and she's cheating on him for good fucking reason, frankly. And then he's got to crash on couches. And so he crashes on different comedians' couches.
Mm.
But my God, like just watching it. I watched actually a thing on the internet that was talking about how this one hack scene keeps happening over and over in movies and TV shows, which is the guy walking in on the wife cheating on him. And oh my gosh. And
she's
never,
calm.
And they never get into why she was cheating on him or what he did. And in this, they actually a little bit show like, well, maybe she's got a fucking point. But it's just watching it. It was like, well, this is a mini comic. This is a 1990s mini comic.
Yeah.
This is that same kind of wide-eyed, innocent protagonist going, "What?
What did I do?
What did I do? You gotta help me." And then, you know, here comes the Artie Lang, and Artie Lang is revealing a lot of stuff about his life, and he's fine. And you've definitely written a sweet thing for Artie Lang to do.
Yeah.
But you don't give a fuck about the main character at all, because the main character is just the wide-eyed innocent who everything is happening to.
Yeah.
And it was just like, man, this really feels like, you know, 90s mini comic autobio. Wow. And watching it, it was like, I don't think I can watch this, because it is so much of that, and I had so much of that back then.
Yeah.
You know, all three of the people we're talking about, Seth Chester and Joe Matt, did it quite well.
Yes.
Joe really did it with, was it That Poor Bastard is how it's collected, but it was also called Peep Show when it was first out.
Yeah.
You know, kind of relationship thing. But at least in that, he made himself a dick.
Yeah.
You know, so you actually, and that's a rare thing. Normally the thing that your autobiographical protagonist does is just wanders around and has things happen to him, and they act shocked, and they're the everyman that we can all relate to.
That's right.
Yeah.
Poor innocent. Why are all these things happening to me?
Yeah, watching it made me feel of like, okay, you know, you had Louis, and he was just incredibly creative with the way he did things, and it was an exciting bunch of seasons. And then you had Marin, and it was just, oh, we're just doing this autobiographical stuff. But then it got a little weird, and it was like, I guess all right. And now we're like, oh, we're doing this again? Fuck, enough. Enough. Okay, we're good. We don't need this. We don't need behind the scenes at the world of stand-up. We're good. We're done. We're good. I was just yelling that at the fucking screen. Like, we're good. All right? I've seen this autobiographical stuff. I've seen this behind the scenes stuff. We're good. We don't need any more of this. I wish Pete Holmes the best. I like his podcast, but we're good. We're fine.
To be fair to myself, please do. I think it was a concert show, not the crashing.
Oh yeah, it's like Making Faces and something like
that. Yeah. That's what I chose not to watch. Instead, I watched Hitman 47. But the reason I watched Hitman 47 is because I was eating. I was just having like a couple hot dogs.
And you like watching murder while you're.
And eating. I thought, well, what is there to watch? Well, I don't want to watch whatever, you know, some sort of serious drama while I have a hot dog. I don't want to watch something, you know. I just felt like. So I'll just put on some dumb junk while I'll eat dumb junk. So that was...
Well, you don't want to laugh while you're eating a hot dog.
No, you could...
Choke on a
you
wiener.
You could inhalate and then, yeah.
Everyone...
That'd be so embarrassing.
Then you're a province headline.
How did he die? He choked on a wiener.
Yeah. Everyone has a good laugh. And then you're terrible. The subject matter of another stand-up show.
Yeah, that's right.
And then someone chokes on a hot dog watching that. Mm-hmm. And then just the cycle continues.
It's an epidemic of wiener choking. Yeah, it could be terrible. So, yeah, Hitman 47.
What'd you think of Hitman 47?
I think Orlando Bloom has a really weird head. Because he's shaved bald in it. He's got a weird thing in the back of his head. Like, I think if you're going to be in a movie like that, the first thing you should have to do is shave your head so they can see what it looks like, and then decide if they're going to cast you or not. I don't think they should cast you and then find out that your head looks like that.
Well, you, because
it's very distracting.
You had to go through chemo.
Mm-hmm.
You're aware of what you look like bald.
Once again, no boast, but look pretty good.
Yeah. I'm afraid I've got some weird angles that I don't think it's a good idea.
I had no choice. So.
Oh, I understand. I understand.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I've thought in the past of like, oh, it'd be good to just shave your head, and then you get like a couple of days of like not having to comb it and just get a lot more done with your life. But no, I'm worried about weird shapeness.
I think that's overrated. The amount. I mean, how often do you comb your hair?
Well, it's shampooing every day. It's getting in there. It's doing you know, maintenance.
Okay. I mean, if you shaved your head, though,
yeah,
you'd have to shave it a lot. I mean, it's bad enough shaving our faces. That sucks.
Well, you let it grow out, right? So you let it grow out. Like, you just shave it once.
So once you're letting it grow out, they have to shampoo it then. You're letting it grow out. So you're shampooing it.
When's the first time you have to shampoo?
Well, almost right away, wouldn't you? I mean, once it's hair. Yeah, because you got to wash your hair. Otherwise, it gets greasy.
Like stubble.
Yeah, but
if
you want greasy stubble on your head.
Greasy stubble. Who's going to know? People, it's greasy stubble. When have you ever seen greasy stubble? When have you ever seen like someone with like really short hair, like in the military, really short hair, and just got ugh, that greasy short fucking buzz cut?
You can tell. You can tell. You don't think you can tell?
I think you can touch tell, but I don't think you can see tell.
You can smell tell too.
Why'd you get so close to the person?
Well, I like to be close to people.
All right, that's fair. Can't argue with that. Really fast.
Okay.
You know, because we're running out of time. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has gotten really good.
The last episode I watched, and I won't give too much away, they were at a hearing, and they broke into an office and got caught.
Okay, it gets really good.
So, the robot stuff has been really interesting.
It's gotten really good.
Okay.
And it's just shifted gears. To the point where now it's like, they're done till April. I'm like, damn it! This is...
Because the Ghost Rider stuff is a little lame.
Yeah, the Ghost Rider stuff didn't fly.
Mm-hmm.
Though I did like that they tied it into the movie.
What movie?
Oh, okay. So what, have you seen the Ghost Rider origin story?
In the show.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's Ghost Rider from the movie.
It is?
Yeah. because he's like Ghost Rider. He's got the regular Ghost Rider head. He comes in. He gives him the power. He's on a motorcycle. That's Ghost Rider from the movies.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay.
So like the Ghost Rider gives him his power. Johnny Blaze gives his power to this guy. You know, but they tied it into the film.
Oh, I didn't realize. I guess I didn't care.
Fair enough. That's fine. By the way, another thing, let me just recommend to folks out there, Lego Batman movie.
Going to see that tomorrow?
Really enjoyed it.
That's my birthday movie.
Little figures up there I've been collecting.
Part of my birthday week?
Yeah.
It's going to see Lego Batman tomorrow.
Let's talk about it next week because I got a theory about it that I want to discuss.
Can I recommend one more thing then? Legion.
Yes. Are you up to episode 3?
I'm up to episode 3. What I like about it so far...
Creeps the fuck out of you.
Nothing's happened, though.
Oh, I know, but oh, my.
Nothing's happened. It's just been, really creepy and a lot of mind games going on right now, and it's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
The filming style is really quite cool. The first episode, particularly. It's a real mind fuck.
Wes Anderson directs the X-Men plus
horror. In a way, kind of Wes Anderson directed through David Lynch, directs a superhero movie or TV show.
And who's the guy who directed The Cell? Who am I thinking?
I don't know.
It's some famous director. But yeah, it's got a good touch of The Cell in it too.
I've never seen that film, so. But yeah, no, it's quite good.
Oh, you should, by the way, you should see The Cell.
Okay.
Yeah.
Try and watch that. It's quite a fun show. And it's what's interesting about all these shows to me, Agent Shield it comes and goes. It's this weird thing where I guess their budget only allows for a certain amount of activity. Mm-hmm. So then there's a lot of like kind of workarounds to why we can't spend a lot of money doing stuff here, but that show really, you feel like you're getting the whole, they really give you like a show, and there's a lot of really interesting film work.
We were watching cinematography. Flash yesterday, and
those shows don't give you nothing.
Flash is pretty good. But they had, in this episode,
excuse me, everyone.
Sure. In this episode, he goes to Gorilla City in Earth 2, mm-hmm. and it's this enormous gorilla city. It's like giant statues of gorillas, giant arena full of gorillas, so many gorillas.
Is there a Statue of Liberty submerged on the beach?
What's that?
Is there a Statue of Liberty submerged on the beach?
No, there is not, though people do make a Planet of the Apes joke earlier on. It is actually a pretty good Planet of the Apes joke.
Okay.
So it's all these things. And because it's shot here, I was saying to Pia, you remember when we didn't used to have all these giant ape head statues around? It was a different city back in the day. But yeah, you just see like all the CGI and then he's fighting like two giant freaking apes. And I was like, oh, the next couple of episodes are just going to be them in the lab. It's going to be a lot of like sitting around going, I don't know. I don't know what to do ethically.
A lot of flashbacks.
Yeah, a lot of like crying, a lot of like hugs, a lot of scenes in the living rooms. There's going to be a lot of nothing because the budget just got blown in this one.
Yeah.
Also, Flash should be able to beat a gorilla. I don't care what the deal is with a gorilla, unless it's a Flash gorilla.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. No, Flash can beat a gorilla. He can beat a guy with a boomerang. Flash can beat anybody. Come on, smarten up.
Wait, did the gorilla win?
Gorilla didn't do bad.
Okay.
Gorilla didn't do bad. It's okay.
Well, if there's not a sense of danger, then it's not very exciting.
There was a sense of danger. Okay. He was a very dangerous gorilla.
Yeah.
But that's the problem with almost all the Flash villains. It's like, what's his deal? He's got a cold gun. And can he like fire it at super speed? No. Then who fucking cares? What's his deal? Heat gun. Same problem. No problem. There's nothing. Boomerangs. He just throws them at normal speed. It's nothing. That's nothing. Reverse Flash. What's his deal? He's just as fast as the Flash. Good. Him. Yes. Keep him. What's your next guy? I don't know. Human Top. What's he do? Spins around at super speed? Fuck him. Then no. That's nothing. None of these guys are at issue at all.
Yeah. Well, but they're an issue to other people. So he still has to stop them. Yeah, he's Flash.
Just stop him in a second. Grab him.
Yeah, yeah.
Pow. Done.
Well, that's why there's so much sitting around the lab, though.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. All right. Takes care of these guys pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Because he's the Flash. He does everything quickly.
Yeah.
Just ask his girlfriend. And then...
That's his sister you're talking about.
What?
I know. That is a thing about that's the show. Turn. He is dating his sister.
That's a turn. Really?
Yeah. His stepsister, yes. But his
sister. Stepsister.
Or adopted sister.
That's still wrong.
It's it's very wrong, but they've somehow glossed over it in the show.
Illegal in some states.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, everyone, let's end on that note.
And as always, we ask a question, and the question is, should you be able to, if you're the Flash, be in a relationship with your adopted sister? I say no.
I say no.
As someone with two adopted sisters, no! I should not date them. I don't care what superpowers I have.
Yeah.
No.
But if you have the power of super dating?
No. Still. It's not strong enough to get me to date my sisters at all. Nope. No dice.
But did he grow up with his stepsister, or did he
meet
her? He did?
From when he was like a very young man. Yeah, like a young boy. Yeah. His mom gets killed, and then he's adopted by this cop and falls in love with his daughter, who he's growing up with. So no, no, Flash at all. No.
How old was he when he went and joined the family?
That's a good question. Probably like 10.
No, you're right. No. Okay. We've answered that question. You guys wanted some hard opinions, some hard and fast opinions. There, you got it.
You've got a lot to you've got a lot to put on the message boards with this episode. But we've got a couple of contests you should tell the nice folks.
We do have some contests, everyone. We've had some entries as well for our Come and Eat With Us. So if you're in town or you're coming to Vancouver for whatever reason, you're visiting family, visiting our beautiful city.
Maybe you've been deported from the States.
Maybe you've been deported from the States.
It's been happening.
It's been happening. It's so sad. As a certain someone likes to say, fake news, real news, still sad. Yes, if you've been deported here and you'd like to come and eat with us or watch us record our show, you can sit and watch us do this show.
Sell it, brother. Sell it.
Well, anyway. I've been making jokes about it, but if I had the opportunity to sit in on a podcast that I liked, I would jump at the chance.
Like which one? What podcast would you like to sit in on?
Well, one that they were in the same room as. Mm-hmm. Maybe like James Bonding. That would be a fun show to sit in on. I don't really watch a lot or don't listen to a lot of podcasts anymore. I really like, talking about podcasts, I really am enjoying Process Party, which features a former guest of the show, Mike Dawson, who used to do Ink Panthers with Alex Robinson.
Right.
Well, he has teamed up with another guy named Zach Soto, who has a website called Study Group. Which features a lot of free comics in there, so it's worth checking out that website. But they're doing this podcast called Process Party, and they're interviewing cartoonists, if you're interested in that. And their interviews are fun. Mike and Zach have a little bit of interplay at the beginning of the show, and that's always enjoyable. And then Zach and a woman that he worked with at Floating World Comics, they have a little kind of what's new comic segment. And she's a charm. She's just a real charm. I think her name is Shauna Matusek, and she's just one of those people that she's got this kind of weird drawling voice, and she's just has a great turn of phrase, and so I always enjoy their little segment. And then, like I say, they have some good interviews as well. So check out that show, Process Party. I'm going to recommend it to our comic fans and friends out there. But anyway,
What is our second contest?
Just to finish up, if you do want to come and have White Spot with us and watch the podcast being done, just let us know. Just write in and say, I'd like to eat with you, or I'm in, or you know, and that'd be great. You can contact us on our website on the comments board, sneakydragon.com. You can write to us by email, sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. You can contact us on our Facebook page. Sorry, this is my nose talking. Page, Sneaky Dragon. We also have a Twitter, which is sneaky@sneaky_dragon, and you can contact us there. Any way you contact us, I put your name onto a piece of paper and throw it into the raffle hat. And so, when is this contest going to end?
When we decide to.
Okay.
But so we have two contests, right?
Our other contest is... Oh, and this is kind of interesting, actually. So, our other contest is we'd like to get a story from you of something that got away, whether it was a guy or a girl, or a thing, or an event,
job?
A job, a moment in your life where you just didn't take advantage of that opportunity. Hopefully it's a humorous story, but also if it's just a story you want to get off your chest, let us know. You can, now this is a bit more tricky, you can send us a WAV file. You can just record into your phone, into your device that people carry around. You can just sit and tell us a story and send it to us to sneakyd@sneakydragon.com or attach it in a Facebook message. Or if you have Skype, you can search for Sneaky Dragon and call us via Skype and you'll get our voicemail. And you can leave a message for us. And in fact, that's a new way of contacting us, not just for this contest, but anytime you want to call us and leave a message, you can do it via Skype. You can search for Sneaky Dragon, call it, and you'll get our voicemail. Uh, I've just, I made the idea that I just won't turn it on, so I'll just get notifications of voicemails.
So what we're looking for the most part, is erotic fanfic.
That's, why not? Because I can dig into my my library of songs and find some good stuff for that. You know, there's lots of good songs, you know. Whip out my big 10-inch record of the band that plays the blues. I have a bunch of those kind of songs. It's really kind of a silly collecting habit. Anyway, let's not go too much into my private life. I keep a lot of myself hidden on this show, as you guys know. So,
but you keep it hidden too long, it coughs its way out.
It coughs its way out, and then I'm talking about my early adventures in masturbation. Guys, thank you so much for listening to the show this week. I think I've covered everything adequately.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say goodbye to you all, and fare thee well, and I will see you again next week. Yeah. Godspeed to you.
All right, and cheers, cheers. And by the way, if you want shirts, go to our website. We have shirts. That's it. Okay, bye.
Bye.